Hi, y'all. Nicole here. This podcast is intended to inspire you on your personal spiritual journey to inner peace. I am not a psychologist or a medical doctor and do not offer any professional health or medical advice. This applies to the podcast guests and or co-hosts. If you are suffering from a psychological or medical condition, please seek help from a qualified health professional. You are listening to A Psychic Story, a podcast that shares behind-the-scenes insights of people who lead supernatural lives among the ordinary. And I'm your host, Nicole Bigley. Join me every Wednesday as I dispel the myths behind magic and lore. Welcome to A Psychic Story. Mysticism. Hello, psychic listeners. Welcome to another episode of A Psychic Story. For this episode, we have Rachel White. She is known as the Skeptical Shaman for her inherent pragmatism and intellectual curiosity as a shaman. Rachel's background is unusual. She spent several decades in high-level strategy roles in corporate America. I know the feeling. While building her shamanic practice, her no BS approach to spirituality encourages clients to maintain their healthy sense of skepticism while keeping an open mind, ultimately seeking out spiritual tools and technologies that have tangible real-world value. And we are going to talk about totem readings. Welcome, Rachel.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Well, let's just dive right in. You said you had an unusual, you know, foray into shamanism. You were in corporate America. So share a little bit about what that was like and how you made your pivot.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I listen to your podcast, but also I talk to other psychics, and we all seem to share a version of the same story, which is we were very intensely psychic as children, didn't enjoy it very much, very unpleasant, what I think gets drawn to you at first. So you find ways to explain that away, excuse it away, shut it down. And by the time I sort of had my incident, event, experience, whatever you want to call it, in my early 20s, I was an atheist. And my other joke is that a lifetime of Catholic school will do that to you. I'm not going to church anymore. I'm good. And yeah, and what's fascinating too is it was the skepticism just inherent in me that I think actually brought me back to spirituality and to shamanism. You know, when I had an experience, I remember thinking, well, I can't be dogmatic. Like, new data's come in. This experience was unequivocal, objective. Other people observed it. There was physical phenomena that was quantifiable and measurable, and it was noteworthy. And to me, having dogma around atheism, you might as well have dogma around any other organized religion. If you don't let new data in, you're kind of, it's the same behavior, right? That I didn't like what I saw, like more the negative traits with blind faith in religion. And so I got curious, and that's how that all kicked off. And it was actually a negative experience, oddly enough, that brought me back to all of this. Everyone thinks it's all, you know, kittens and rainbows and ascended masters. And it's
sunshine and rainbows. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's not. But I took the experience as a win, honestly, where I'm like, well, if this thing exists, that's interesting. It's quite literal. You know, it was almost like a horror movie sort of situation. I thought, well, if bad guys exist, good guys might exist, and let's go explore. Yeah.
Do you mind sharing a little bit about that, what that was like?
Yeah, not at all. It's a weird story. And it's funny because I'm not afraid of any of this. Obviously, I read tarot cards basically for a living, you know? So like, if I was squeamish about these things, I wouldn't make it very far. But I don't tell this story at night. Like, that's how visceral the sort of sense memory is. So I was living alone. I was in corporate real estate already, had graduated college, had this sort of nice but crappy apartment, like all young people. Like, it was in a good neighborhood in Chicago, and it was cute and whatever, but it was like a studio, and it was in a rent-controlled building, and there's weirdos living in the building and all that good stuff. So it started one day, I started getting uncomfortable for the first time in my apartment alone, where I was like checking my door to make sure it was locked. I remember the first night being like, I didn't really want to turn my light off to go to bed. Like, weird stuff that only happened when you were maybe a little kid.
You were sensing something and it just felt off.
Mm-hmm. Very subtle, very subtle. And then the next night, I didn't go to bed at all until like I kind of passed out at 3 a.m. I was very uncomfortable falling asleep in my apartment. So it had escalated a bit. I kept all the lights on, which as an atheist, like, none of these things are normal. behavior, right? And I was like, I wonder like what's got me creeped out. Third night, full on, what I would call a negative entity attack. People call them demons. You know, I think loaded language sometimes can disrupt thinking, critical thinking. And the way I looked at it is as a parasite for a very specific reason. I'm laying in bed and I look over and I just see this man's face. And he was really like objectively attractive, like almost like a painting or something quite perfect. Next thing I know, I feel something go into my mouth. And as I'm trying to speak, it's like a voice from The Exorcist, from The Omen, you know, garbled, demonic sounding. And I'm freaked out, obviously, right? And so having the background I have, I remember started trying to say a Hail Mary. Like, because, you know, it almost like prayer. And this is interesting. I don't think the prayer.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at your situation. Just the fact that you're an atheist. And then you're like, okay, Hail Mary. That's like the first thing you're going to have to do.
Pardon my French, but you reach for that real quick. Like,
right. Absolutely.
Yeah, all of a sudden that comes out. And it was hard to get the words out. And I was like, oh my God, like this is happening. And I heard myself saying it in a different voice. And I remember the feeling of prayer wasn't like necessarily religious feeling. It was almost like it organized my neural pathways. Like it organized me. There was something about it. Maybe it's sacred geometry, the cadence of it. I don't know what it is. So just the fact that I remembered it and I could focus with that in that moment. And I felt whatever it was leave my mouth. And I looked around the apartment and there were all kinds of French doors and little glass cabinet doors and things like that. They were all open at exactly 90 degrees. Everything in the apartment, every drawer. Every cabinet door, the fridge, every door. And I was like, yeah, exactly. And I remember freaking out. So I called my mom and she's like, you got to get out of there. Like, you know, and no one's asking questions because this is so not in my repertoire, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember her going, was it a dream? I go, I was wide awake. Like, I haven't been sleeping. I did not doze off. This was waking reality. Left my building, went, thank God for big cities, went to a 7-Eleven until like the morning to light, came back home, showered. As I came back in, I noticed this large group of people in the hallway. And there had been a Native American man living down the hall. I'm part Native American. And he was an alcoholic and he was married to someone. And I said, what is this all about? And she goes, oh, he's passed away. He passed away 3 days ago. Oh, and everybody's coming to visit his body. And I lost all sense of compassion because of what happened. And it just clicked in my brain. I was like, that
was
thing
him?
Came from that body. And I think it was attached to him like a parasite.
Oh,
and he
I see.
Expired and it went looking for a new host. And I think it's why I was uncomfortable. I could sense this thing. And
that's
in
why
my
those
presence,
3 days. Or, yeah. You were
yes,
feeling.
And he had died exactly 3 days ago. So the body had been sitting in there. And I started yelling at this poor woman. And I was like, you got to get him out of here. I called 911. I said, there's a body in the building. You know, like I lit it up on everybody and I didn't care because it just made complete sense to me. It was like this perfect clarity of the situation. Mm-hmm. And so from that point forward, even though I worked in corporate real estate and consulting and outsourcing for the next, you know, decades plus, I kept looking into this. I read everything I could get my hands on. I studied voraciously, you know, and I would go to trainings and workshops and things like that. Those were kind of hit or miss, as I'm sure you're aware of. Like,
yeah.
Some of them were good. Some of them were like a big letdown. And I just found that individual study, like reading books, researching, meditating, you know, going through all this noise to try and find the signal, you know, because I think there's a lot of mixed messages in spiritual
Absolutely.
Content, whether it's old school or new age, it doesn't really matter. So trying to figure out what made sense. And that was the genesis of all of this. Eventually, I decided to create Totem Readings, my spiritual practice, because I couldn't really find a mentor. I think part of that is being in Chicago. You know, it's just a different place for shamanism. It's not exactly like a res, right? With like old school medicine men and women. So yeah, just was like maybe the best way to learn is to do. And I started just with tarot cards, which I had read as a young child. I mean, very little kid and had kind of put away and brought back in.
Wow, that's a fascinating story. And how cool, though, that you were able to make that correlation, right? Between when he passed away, that you had intuitively received the message or the knowledge of this was a parasite, it was jumping, that catapulted you into your journey into understanding more. And I also just want to commend you. And for any listener who is hearing this, that's exactly like what Rachel's saying. It's not a one size fits all for everybody, right? When you're going into your spiritual journey, the thing that I've found the most solid and comfort and just helping me is, yes, I've taken classes, I've been certified numerous times over for different things. But the thing that really helped me the most was that self-discovery and reading and learning and the knowledge of it. And it may feel overwhelming at first, but I feel like if you have something that you are really drawn to and you start to have that passion and or just curiosity, right? It really helps you, because usually what I found is that means that you had a connection to it in a past life, and you probably have that knowledge or wisdom within you, and you're retapping it, or you're building upon that foundation that you had before you came into this life.
Well, the other piece of, like, I'm grateful for that experience, even though it was negative and upsetting, but I'm grateful for it because I was an atheist at the time. And so in my experience, literally my lived experience, ignorance is not a defense against negative energy. It's not, like, it exists just like everything else in our ecosystem exists. So, you know, sometimes I'll hear from people like, well, I don't know if I want to know, like, I don't want to invite that in. It's like, I honestly don't think that's how it works. That's where the skepticism comes in. I'm like, I think these things need food. I think there's some kind of non-corporeal life form, right? Like, and it's like they exist whether you believe in them or not. So in my experience, my personal opinion, getting educated,
right,
it is nothing but empowering. And in fact, the more deeply I went into the topic and content and everything, the more comfortable I got. It's just like, you know, I live in Austin now. We moved here from Chicago last year, my husband and
beautiful
I.
Beautiful city.
And you go hiking. It's great. And there's lots of nature and lots of animals, which is great for me. But, you know, people be like, it's the equivalent of going hiking. And someone goes, well, there aren't any rattlesnakes, so don't worry about it. And it's like, but there are. My awareness of them or belief in them doesn't make them any less or more real. And sure, with energy and stuff, things get different, like intention or what you fixate on, I do think can shift your energy, and maybe you draw wrong things to you or whatever. But frankly, education, transparency, empowerment have only helped me and my clients. Yes. So, yeah,
I believe that 100%. And also, I'm not going to say which kind of spiritual practitioners, but there's some big names, ones that have thousands of books and all kinds of things. And for a long time, their teachings were, there's only the light. There's only angels.
Oh, yeah.
There's no demons.
I'll say one of them, Doreen Virtue.
Yes, absolutely. And Lynette Brown.
And then she had a hell of an experience. And then she threw the baby out with the bathwater. Mm-hmm. And I remember criticizing Doreen back in the day when I'd go to these healing centers or whatever in Chicago. Someone would be like, I'm certified in the Doreen Virtue angel deck readings. I can give you an angel deck, and there's no such thing as anything negative. It's, you know, you only invent that in your own head. I was like, this is so irresponsible. Like, it's so crazy to me. It's toxic positivity.
It is. And also, you can, you know, and I don't mean to, like, bash anyone or be in judgment. This is a true, like you said, like, there's a balance to it, and knowledge is power, and you may not want to dabble in it. You may not want to go in that direction, and that's totally fine in your choice. However, again, knowledge is power, and you can't think about balance and that one thing exists and the other doesn't. That's why, right? And I also do believe, like, if you want to just be working on the positive and be in the light and you want to channel that aspect, yes, absolutely do that. But again, it doesn't negate the other.
It doesn't. And, you know, we cover this a lot in, I do a spiritual transformation coaching program now. And I stayed away from the word coach for a very long time for obvious reasons, because I had met some life coaches and things like that when I worked at Deloitte, everything else. I'm like, oh boy, this is a whole group of people that really like
they just charge you a lot of money.
Yeah. And I got to see behind the curtain, which is one of my blessings / curses, is like I would always get a line of sight into their life and be like, oh, like, but you're not successful in the thing you're telling other people that you can help them be successful. And it just struck me as odd. But I finally got over that. And in the program, a lot of what we do is, you know, the first few weeks is energetic protection. Like, where's your energy body at? Can you assess that? Can you check in with it? What does it look like to you? Like, through these different meditation tools and other shamanic tools, really getting in touch with your benchmarks. Like, how am I doing? Am I healthy? Am I tired? Whatever. People kind of, it's funny, they go, well, that's so sort of basic. I go, yeah, like, it's basic meaning foundational. And we don't do any of the other work until we've gotten our house in order a bit. Yeah, just for everybody's safety and everybody's benefit.
Yeah. And all of it, the grounding, the protection, like you mentioned, it's a huge piece. Well, I would love to pivot to your totem readings and how that came about. So you mentioned your experience and also your journey and just finding information and creating your own practice, both personally and then now professionally, and how you're sharing that. What is that like? And walk us through that.
It's there are easier ways to make money. That's what I also tell the kids in the coaching program. I'm like, listen, you know, I'll help you, but here's kind of the real deal. And in fact, Tuesday, I'm doing a free little webinar on Zoom just around the math, like the numbers of this kind of a business, because it's tough. You have to have a lot of giddy up, I think, and you have to be really focused and go slow, right? Like all these people, I get all these notes, they're like, how did you scale? I'm like, it's been 15 years. No one said the word scale at any point. So yeah, I started doing tarot readings, something I did as a child, just out of my place in the West Loop in Chicago, and really enjoyed it and kept kind of growing and then doing shamanic journeying workshops and things like that, but all off the side of my desk. And I'm frankly glad I did it that way, because it was sort of like totems growth was underwritten by a corporate job. I didn't have to ever make decisions with totems for financial reasons, ever, for a very long time.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's the best model, because then you can sort of play, you can innovate, you can experience without having the stakes really high. And the other thing I've found is that psychic work, which is different from just being psychic, you know, like kind of accessing it on demand, on a schedule, yes, is a weird phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And to do that, you know, you've really got to be like organized, frankly, in a way that I wasn't expecting. And so, yeah, I love it. It's great work, and it's grown as my practice has grown. And as I get more comfortable doing things with clients, like I remember getting certified in mediumship by my medium like 6 years ago, and then not offering that as a service until very recently, mainly honestly, because of the emotional and psychological piece. Like I wanted to make sure I was ready. And so like the slow grow of totem allowed me to like make sure I was cool with things before I started dabbling with people's energy bodies and their, you know, their connection to their loved one. It's pretty high stakes work in and of itself. And I love it now. And one of the biggest joys is this past year doing so many podcast interviews and meeting people and having the conversation, I think is super important. Letting people know, like, you know, I didn't believe in anything either. Sometimes things happen. You have to reframe things. If that's you, I want to talk to you, because you're sort of probably spiritually homeless. You're skeptical, but you're curious. And so much of our space is, it's a little culty. Like it I remember running into that strange, yeah, like, of course it's all high strangeness, but like human strangeness and being surprised by that. Cause I thought, well, corporate's where the bad people are and I'm coming into this and this is where the good people are. Like you're Reiki certified. You have the tools. Of course you're a good person. You're going to be honest in the, how naive I was about all of that. So that's the other thing I love about the conversation is letting people know, like, you don't need to change your lifestyle. You don't have to join a group. You don't have to wear an outfit. You don't have to, quote, believe anything to be my client. I actually don't talk to my clients about my personal beliefs on purpose. It's not for them, and it could inordinately influence them. It's in shamanism, we all have our own experience of the divine. It's how it's supposed to be. So, yeah, I try and keep that distance while having the conversation.
And when you were looking into the shamanism, so when you went from atheist and then looking into that aspect of things, into the spirituality and just energy as a whole, I'm assuming because of your culture and part of that piece of yourself and your family, was that what drew you? Or did you have certain experiences that made you want to go into that direction more so than others?
Well, you know, I know people that are actual practicing witches. And like, that's a religion. So that one was off the table. I was trying to find nomenclature and an area of practice where I could still be agnostic and not maybe it, like the whole I'm a witch thing, a little bit of it's stolen valor. Because I know people who like are witches. They're also chiropractors and doctors, like for their day job. But it's not like a hat they put on or a costume they wear. Like it's pretty intense, actually.
It's a religion. It's a way of life. Yeah.
It really is. And so, you know, shamanism, what I liked about it, number one is I've always had shamanic illnesses, always since moment of birth. I always had weird things, none of it serious or life-threatening, but odd and unexplained by Western medicine. Like I've had my wisdom teeth extracted several times. They keep growing back. So, you know, shaman means wounded healer. And there's usually a physical, like a more physical aspect to the work. So I don't offer the service, but I am a medical intuitive. Unfortunately, my dog has a hip back problem right now and I can feel it, you know, when I'm around him. So there's just certain hallmarks of a shaman. The other thing is shamans are not group people ever. It doesn't matter what continent. They just don't hang out in large groups. I'm not really a group person. I don't like matching outfits. Stuff makes me nervous.
Bows in your hair.
Yeah, it gets like a little Scientology. Like I just get weird vibes. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm a bit of a loner. And that's a very shamanic thing. And the other piece is other people might call themselves, you know, healers, light workers, etc. To me, shaman, that word integrates dark and light and a little bit of everything. And within shamanism, there's a tradition of what's called warrior medicine, which is data, like individuals who specifically get downloads, information, visions, you know, data, for want of a better term. And that's sort of what naturally just happens with me. I'm less of a hands-on healer and more of what I would say is like a data giver. I empower people with their own spiritual information.
So that's what drew you into it. Can you share any experiences that you had with it that just really kind of not necessarily validated it, but just gave you that confirmation, I guess, that you are heading in the direction? Yeah. Just share some of those. I'd love to hear them.
Well, the good thing about shamanism is it can really shift and change as you shift and change. Like it's supposed to build and grow, which I like. It's not restrictive. There's no ceiling on it. And it's kind of the opposite of blind faith, which I don't think people necessarily always pick up on at the outset. I had so many experiences and most of them were just individual, you know, me working with clients. Like I would go to trainings and things like that. But working with a client, reading cards or telling them what comes in and realizing that there's substance to that, that that resonates with that person over and over and over again, thousands of times, you know, I build my quote faith system honestly. Like, you know, it took 15 years to get to the point where I'm like, yeah, there might be something to this, doing it the whole time. Almost a spirit of like what a scientist or explorer might have, where everything's a bit of an experiment. Let's see, and let me know in a week. And I would say too, my clients are very impressive people. And that's been an incredible experience for me, is almost everyone's had some kind of metaphysical, spiritual experience in their life. And I get the privilege of like hearing those stories or sharing those moments with people. So from a metadata perspective, like I'm over all these stories, all these people, and the picture is, this is real. There's something mm-hmm. to this.
Yeah. People sometimes when they come to me, ask questions like, am I crazy? And did I really experience this or versus that? And it's kind of like, I still feel there's, and in some ways there's skepticism there. You should have a healthy amount of skepticism and logic in your brain. But also at the end of the day, if you are experiencing something, to me, that's real. And you just need to figure out, okay, to what extent is quote unquote real mean, right? Like what is it that you're experiencing on that emotional level? Or that spiritual level or that sense, and it's happening for a reason. And especially if you see things that are in a repetitive pattern and just keeps occurring over and over and over again, I don't believe that there's coincidences in these instances.
The more you do this work, the less subtle the mm-hmm. confluences are, I think. So to your point, no such thing as coincidence. Part of that, I don't know if it's a it might be a few factors. One of them might be increased awareness. You're paying attention to these signs and symbols that are repeating patterns, or also that by doing the work, you're more attuned to that dimension and it interacts with you more because you're receiving the message. I've noticed both. It could be a combination of a bunch of factors, but for sure, I don't ever believe in coincidence. It's uncanny. I mean, every day it's signs, symbols, high weirdness. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't even want to go down the track of it, but other than you've heard me or people probably heard me say on the show or social media that there's a bunch of deer around me. And each time I just start in my mind to think, okay, it's just nature. They're just around because they're looking for food or whatever else. And maybe it's because I feed them. I don't know. But then something bigger will happen. Like either there's bucks that swing by or there's just a sense of telepathy and communication and the energy. And so you can't deny that when those sorts of things happen, at least again, for me. So I want to pivot a little bit to the mediumship. So you said that you started out and you learned about it. And then for quite a while, you were working on it just for yourself. And now you're offering it to clients. Why mediumship, and what kind of things would you like to share with the listeners about how? Because I do feel like it takes a certain person to be a medium and to take on clients, because you are oftentimes, not oftentimes, all the time, dealing with somebody in a moment of grief. And so sometimes people give their power away and just will like want to latch on to anything and everything. And then there are sometimes the skeptics that come in, right? And so it's a balance, I feel like, with that.
Yeah. Well, full stop. I've recently, since we moved to Texas, decided I don't do mediumship with new clients. So your point is very well taken. And there's a few reasons for that. But one thing right up front is I don't do, like, it's pretty rigorous booking a mediumship appointment with me. And I'm not trying to be a pain in the ass, but the ethics, to your point, there's grief, there's people wanting to give up power, et cetera. It can almost turn into an addiction. All of those things are real. So I don't work with anyone who's lost someone close to them in the last 6 months. If it was a suicide or a homicide or a drug overdose, 12 months, full stop, because it's for that person. So they're still in grief, of course, but not as, I want to talk to them, I want to connect with them. You know, it's not as maybe desperate and unhealthy at that point. It gives them the time to grieve. It also gives the person on the other side who's transitioned time to process. You know, I view people's deceased loved ones as humans. They're humans. They're just non-corporeal anymore. And so I try and like treat them accordingly, right? That work is my favorite session. It is so meaningful. But I will tell you, as a psychic, and I don't know if you relate to this or not, as you do psychic work, it feels weird because it feels like nothing to you, because the things you're saying have no relevance to you. The thought did not originate in you. And you're hearing these words and it might as well be blabber to you. Mm-hmm. But then you watch it resonate with the person, sort of that pure channeling work.
Yes.
And that's really sweet and cool and nice. And it's given me a lot of hope and faith that there's like more to this, that things extend past our physical lifespan. But in terms of the skeptics, I don't mind people being a little skeptical. I really don't. Like, I would much rather have that than someone who's the, you know, a version of a religious zealot, right? I'd just much rather have a normal, because that's how I'd be. I'd be like, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. We'll see. But I've had a few people here where, even though I level set my email ahead of time, like, this is not like how it is on TV. It's not.
Right. It's not a TV show.
Yeah, it's not a curiosity. Like, it can get kind of intense. So if you're not ready for some of that, maybe it's not the session for you. And everybody just says, oh, yeah, no, please. And then I realize very quickly when they show up, they didn't read the email, right? We joke on my tombstone, it's going to say, read the email. That's like my little thing.
Mine should say, per my last email.
Yeah. And I had one client, she was younger, and we were getting into this, and her grandfather was here. I could tell he died of a stroke. I knew what side, what hemisphere of his brain the stroke was in. He's giving her advice for the future, like not for the present moment. And she's like shrugging her shoulders. I'm like, do you not know this person? She goes, yeah, no, I do. It's my grandpa. I don't know. And I was like, this isn't even remotely interesting to you. And she's like, well, it just doesn't make sense. Like, I'm not dating anyone right now. I'm like, he's talking to you about the future. And I just hit this moment, like this very human moment of like, get out of my house, kind of, you know, because I work mm-hmm. out of my home here. And it just shocked me. The rudeness to spirit was what I got initially the most upset about. The spirit takes a lot of energy for them. He's showing up very mm-hmm. earnest. Yeah. And he's apologizing for certain things in the family, patterns that show up in the family. It felt really substantive to me. And it's not even my grandfather, right? Mm-hmm. And then the sort of like boredom with it. And also the not like, I'm from Chicago. Where I come from, we have a lot of problems, but one of them is not putting other people at ease, right? Like, I'm intensely introverted, but I know how to just be a human being with someone, and to sit and kind of like shrug like you're not impressed is so rude. It blew my mind. And I actually I did ask her to leave.
Also, what are you paying for? Right? Like, I don't know.
I said, why did you want this particular session? Because I did email you, and she goes, I don't know. I was curious. I wanted to see if it was like how it is on TV. I literally sent you an email about that. And just, yeah, it was sort of a weird experience. I was like, no more for new clients. That way we can both get a feel for each other in another way. Because I didn't like how that made me feel. I for several hours after that, I was like, no more mediumship. Like, it's off the website. No more. Because it left me with a bad feeling. I don't know how else to put it. Of course, I've done them since then and they've gone great, you know, with existing clients, and it'll be fine. But I think that stage gate of another service first might be great.
Well, you're also not doing it for entertainment or for show, right? Like there are different reasons, right? There are different reasons for people to go to psychics, mediums, what have you. And if you want to do 1-800 dial a psychic, that sort of thing, and that's for you, then that's fine. But it sounds like when I can tell from your energy and your personality that it's like, if we're going to do this, let's do the real work. Let's dive in. And what does that look like for your spiritual growth and how that evolves? And especially when you're channeling and you're pulling people in from the other side, like you said, it's a lot of effort on their part, and they take a lot of, you know, just compassion and empathy that goes into it. I am curious to hear, when you are doing your mediumship, you mentioned you just get messages in and you're like, okay, this doesn't mean anything to me, but it does to the other person. How do those messages come to you? How do they feel, and what do they look like?
A variety of ways. So one of the great things about mediumship is literally every session is very different, which makes it really interesting. I am predominantly what they call claircognizant or clairsentient. So I just get thoughts. It's like, almost like my stream of consciousness, but it's not mine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot in the mind's eye. And I'll get specific phrases, images, symbols, you know, all of the above. Occasionally, yesterday, there was a lot of touching, a lot of whispering in the room. So the physical aspect had kicked up a bit. And that's not that common, but that will happen. Like, so if someone asks, do you think it's so-and-so? And I'll ask and I'll get, you know, a grip here. It's like, yeah, that's me, kind of a thing. So it comes in a variety of ways. Sometimes too, less mediumship, more pure channeling. I find I'll start automatic writing too, which is a whole other animal. But like almost like it flows better on a piece of paper that I'll look at. And I won't even have a memory of writing that 3 seconds ago. It's new to me too. So yeah, it comes in and I think people, like when we do the coaching program, I've noticed people really think it's going to be a whiz bang, like fireworks kind of experience to access spiritual data. And in every case, because they're already all basically psychic, if not very intuitive to begin with as a baseline, I go, you want someone to turn the lights on, but the lights are on. It's so much more subtle than people think. It's like the opposite of effort.
I love the way you said that, because it is true. It's like, it's almost just starting to become aware and conscious of whether it's the signs, whether I also equate it to almost like telepathy. There's very clear I can tell when it's my thought, because I'm like, you know, what am I going to have for dinner? You know what I mean? Like, oh, I have this to-do list. There's my thought, and then there's thoughts that just come in and they're really not thoughts. It's what I call messages. And it's just either out of nowhere or it comes and it's consistent and concise. And when that comes in, I'm like, okay, where is this coming from? And I always have to kind of tune in from that standpoint and say, okay, is it my higher self? Is it my guides and angels? Or where is this? And I know people are kind of like, well, how can you tell? And it's like, that's just, again, starting to become aware when you have those thoughts or feelings and emotions, again, however you pick up on information, is just to start to ask that question. Okay, is this of me? Is this of something else? And then you start to see patterns and repetitiveness of what that looks like. And then that's when you start to, it's almost like putting pieces of a puzzle together when you're first starting out, I think.
Totally. Puzzle, yes. I call it the scavenger hunt. Because you don't know what the clues are all going to come together to signify until the end of it. So, you know, when I read tarot cards as an example, people go, well, I don't understand how this is going to happen. I just don't see it yet. And I go, because it hasn't happened yet. And so I encourage them to take notes. And I go, as these events unfold, you'll have this framework to go back to and go, oh yeah, this is what this is. And now that means this. And it just gives you a little bit more of a blueprint, like a lay of the land. It's not meant to be, you know, doom and gloom and you have no free will and all of that. It's really just guideposts, in my experience.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. So why totem? Why that word and for your business?
Well, yeah. In corporate, you know, I am, it's depressing, personally responsible for dozens of brands of different things like technology stacks, products, services. So I did a lot of that work and I worked a lot on innovation, which involved a lot of like product development, things like that. And I was sitting there thinking, what would give people the sort of subconscious impression of shamanism without using the word, right? It's both specific and general. Like totem is a very specific sort of thing. And yet it's general in the sense that everyone's totem could be different. You know, Chris Nolan and his movie Inception, they all had totems, like a chess piece or an object. And just that generic yet specific thing I thought was interesting. And the way I work with clients, it's not transactional. Like, to your point, I'm not making balloon animals at a backyard kids party for a living. It's really long-term, relationship-driven versus transaction-driven. And so as we work, it's figuratively like building the totem. Like, you're moving up and through different guides, totem animals, spirit guides, whatever it is. And it's all like, it's you building this journey for yourself. And you have to do it literally from the basement to the attic. There's no quick way to get there.
I love that. For people that aren't familiar with totems, would you explain what they are?
Yeah, it could be a lot of different things. But within shamanism, the idea of a totem is generally a totem animal or an object, plant, being that is your primary guide, the thing that represents you and your energy. I always cheat when I explain this and I'm like, you know, Game of Thrones. And everyone's like, yeah. I go, so the different families had different sigils, and that's like their version of a family.
For their houses.
Mm-hmm. Their family totem, the dire wolves or the dragons or the lions or the, you know, whatever it might be, were sort of their little totemic symbols. Yeah.
Oh, very cool. I never really thought about it like that. But yes, I could see that. And it represents an energy. It represents some sort of, I don't want to say power, but empowerment between that person and their spirituality. And also something that they then, if you look at like animal guides and what that looks like too, like if you have one like that, then it actually shows up. Or I've also had people, like, they've had dragons as like their spirit guides and animals. And as a result of that, it's like, okay, well, you're not going to really see a dragon. Like, would it be awesome if you could, like, in real life, but you can energetically pick up on that and sense that. So I feel like that could be something cool too, for people to kind of explore a little bit. Like, what is their totem?
I am one of those people.
You have a dragon?
With a dragon. Yeah. And I've had it since
amazing.
Childhood. And I just thought those were just dreams everybody has. And then I was in week one of, quote, shaman school, which was not cool. And I don't recommend it. It wasn't that great. But my first journey, this large dragon head came up out of Lake Michigan, right on the shore there in Chicago, in the darkness, and had a big yellow eye. And I was, of course, terrified. I'm like, oof, that's not good. That's not a good one to have, right? Like, that can't be good. And I went back into another journey and started talking to it. And she talked like a valley girl. And it was the funniest thing ever.
Really?
And she was a joy guide. Yeah, which is why I say to people, yeah, you can Google what is my totem mean, and you can talk to someone
right.
like me. But I always try and get my clients to go in the meditation to have that conversation directly. Because then you're going to get insights that, like, Google search results just aren't going to generate for you.
I didn't know anyone else had dragons. I haven't, speaking of coming out of the psychic closet, I guess everybody else will know this. I too have a dragon. Only my family knows. They thought I was crazy. I was like, I have a dragon. They're like, what? Okay, creative imagination as a child. And yeah. So that's very cool.
Well, let's share dragon info. So mine's unusual looking in that it doesn't have wings, which I've learned is a very like Japanese, Chinese kind of thing. And I'm neither Japanese nor Chinese, which is proof that shamanism kind of doesn't care. Like, you'll get whatever guides you get. And it's black, and it's always been female, and is associated with water, which is interesting. I've had a lot, like probably hundreds of dreams riding on this thing right over water. So watching Game of Thrones was uniquely exhilarating for me, even though those are a little different. Those guys have wings and stuff.
Right. Yeah, no, mine showed up in my mind's eye when I was trying to tap into, I don't even know, I think this was right when I was done with my Reiki certification. And I was just trying to tap into additional spirit guides and angels outside of Michael, who's been with me forever. I'm like, okay, I know you're my man, but like, who else do I have around me? And I just got this huge image of this dragon with, like, it was big black dragon with like these red kind of scales that kind of shimmered a little bit. So when you looked at it, it looked primarily black, but then it had this underlying red color that almost turned black, and these massive wings. And it was showing me that it was another layer of protection, and that it came from magic from a past life. So I was like, okay, that's really cool. Really leaned into it for the first part of my Reiki journey. And that was personally, this dragon doesn't turn up for anyone in sessions. It's really just for me and my spiritual journey. And yeah, I just never really talked about it because I didn't know anyone else had one. So I'm glad that I met you. We can swap dragon stories later too. Yeah.
Well, what's really interesting, one of the stories you asked, like, that made this resonate as real, is I was doing a workshop, shamanic journey group guided meditation thing in a yoga studio. And one of my friends was there. She's certified in Reiki. And I was tired. I must have said something like, I'm really tired. I'm just overworked. And she, against training, I'd like to point out, took it upon herself without permission to try and send me Reiki while I was doing the workshop, which don't do that, guys. Get consent. And this is a cautionary tale. And apparently, so she texted, I had no idea this happened. She texted me when I was eating at a restaurant afterwards. And it was like, are you mad at me? And I was like, no, why? Are you okay? Right? Like, what just happened? She goes, well, I tried to send you Reiki. And all of a sudden, I saw a big black dragon and it growled at me. And I was like, yeah, because she protects my energy body, man. And you didn't ask permission. And there is no way, like you, I do not talk about this. Mm-mm, this person had no idea. And she doesn't work as a psychic. She's an esthetician who happens to have a Reiki certification. And so this is like not even up her alley. It really upset her. Like she thought that was me being angry at her.
Oh my goodness. Well, yeah, that's so cool that she showed up that way, because same thing, like I had, not that people were working on me, but I had had my dragon show up to them when they were working on me, when I had given permission. And the visual, yeah, there were two people in particular that described it. I was like, okay, again, not telling them that. I was like, all right, this is real, because there's no way that they would have energetically picked up on this if that had not been the case. So that's so cool and fascinating. Maybe we should write a book about dragons. Maybe that's on the table for later.
I would love to. And yeah, it's when other people start seeing your imaginary friend, something's up.
Right, right.
Something's up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, exactly. Okay. So then I want to kind of go back to, I know we're bouncing around a little bit, but about the totem reading. So when people come to you, you mentioned that you have the tarot card readings, you also offer mediumship, but only for when you've been working with the client for a while.
Yeah.
What is the actual, like, how do you prefer people work with you? And what is a session like under the totem readings?
Sure. Well, people can just book with me on my website. It links up with my calendar. So people do that. I offer, you know, channeling, Akashic record readings, tarot card readings, all different kinds of things. I do energy work, but it's much more shamanic energy work. So it's, I'm Reiki certified and all that. But even in Reiki, the guy who did my tomb, I was like, you're, whatever this is, you're not doing Reiki. Like, you're doing something. It was a pretty funny moment. I was like, all right, well, we'll just keep rolling with it, I guess.
I was going to say, what is shamanic energy work? Like, how does that differ? What's it look like for you?
It sort of just combines all of the things. So it's less about, like, clients who get energy work from me, they don't tend to feel warmth, as an example. I've never touched people, even in person. I've just never felt, it's more like I work on the subtle bodies. And I realized very early on when I was practicing Reiki that I get so much data, like visually and symbolically, that I tend to just take pages and pages of notes while I'm working. So I tend to focus on like removing entities or cords seems to be a sweet spot for me. So if, you know, someone's going through a bad breakup or whatever, like come see me, kind of. But if you, you know, you're just in grief and maybe you're sad and you want to feel better, I may not be the best person for you. Like it'll give you data, but I'm not sure it'll make you feel better. It's not a day at the spa, frankly. Right. And we learned that the hard way. But yeah, how I like to work, you know, I finally am doing, you know, the coaching work, and that's kicking off in January, and we meet every week, and that's all individual work. And it's just me being, you know, the Encyclopedia Britannica, the, you know, autistic archive of shamanism and every culture and everything. And someone will say, I had this dream. I go, that's a thing. Let's talk about that. That's a thing. And rolling with that. So I like to work with clients that have a little bit of self-awareness and maybe are not super attached to outcome. Like when someone comes in and they've been single for a while and they're really, really desperate to hear that they're going to meet the love of their life in the next 2 months, that's a tough session. Because no matter what, I'm probably going to let you down a little bit with the truth. People that are just kind of like, what's up? Like, what's coming up for me? Where am I going? Or I'm at a crossroads with my career and I want to maybe start my own business. Or, you know, I want to leave this marriage that's kind of run its course. And what's next for me? People that have that spirit of curiosity, too. Mm-hmm. Most of my clients are very, very high performing people in business, medicine, law, which is, I think, unusual because I have friends who do what I do and they don't get the same clients. And what's funny is you'd think that those would be difficult people because they're not very woo. They're the best. They show up on time. They take notes. They ask very good questions. They're organized. It's like a pleasure to work with them, frankly. They treat it like a business meeting. And I take that as a compliment, like it's our quarterly business review or something.
Oh, I love that. I can see, though, I know other people in business that you said that other people know you and you know them and they're in business and they also do this, but you have a very specific business energy about you. So I think that you're also going to attract that type of clientele that is appreciative of time, organization, walking people through things as far as having objectives and growth and what that looks like. So it does. So it doesn't surprise me. Like, it may surprise you, but in talking to you, it doesn't surprise me.
And I have more male clients than my friends that are men have with their practices. I have a lot of police officers. I lived and worked a couple blocks from the Chicago Police Training Academy and things like that. So that might be part of it. But also homicide detectives, they have experiences, man. They see stuff. Oh, they're way more tuned into woo than people might think. A lot of ex-military. So a lot of my energy work has been people that have served in the military who have some PTSD or some physical challenges. And we get into that work. You know, and that's a sweet spot too, because a lot of it is just releasing and cutting and disconnecting and moving chi around.
Because they have traumatic experiences, and whether you want to call it reality and natural or supernatural, that probably tunes them into the other side more and the other dimensions in the energy. And it's beautiful that they can come to you and you can work with them, because that is hard work. Both,
it's some of my favorite work to do. Yeah. And, you know, the other thing, too, is I self-published a tarot deck, which was a real passion project. It's totally the vibe of Totem.
Ooh, I'd love to get a copy of it.
Oh, yes. It's on Amazon. It's the Totem Tarot Deck. So that's our nine of coins. We make coins
crystals.
Ooh, I love that
one. Crystals, I was going to say.
Yeah, it's more like, you know, I just found tarot decks to be a little cheesy, kind of like. This is our Two of Wands.
Oh, that's beautiful.
You know, it's just a different vibe. So I made this. This has been so much fun to work with and to have people message me about their experiences with it. It's fun. And then behind me, I make flower essences. I hand make them in our garden. We grow everything from seed. And what you don't see is the other room and this room. There are thousands of bottles. I counted we're above 6,000 bottles. So apparently.
Because that was going to be my next question, is what's behind you? Because
I'm a little manic. Yeah. So what I love about flower essence is this was another thing, like crystals, that I thought was total placebo effect of bullshit, frankly. And I had a friend give me the Bach rescue remedy. We worked together in corporate. And I started to psychically see the auras of plants about a week into taking it. And
Whoa.
I couldn't believe it. So to make sure that's what it was, I stopped taking it. And sure enough, that ability dissipated, started back up again. And what I became a huge consumer of flower essences, you know, in the last 10 years. It's definitely built. And I like them because they work without constant effort or attention. You know,
yes.
So much of this work is hard. It's draining. And it's like at a certain point, like you don't want the spiritual version of psychotherapy constantly in every corner of your day. And so you can take a flower essence that has this. Mine have a bit of the plant matter in them, so they're unusual that way. Like the mint behind me has mint in it. It tastes like mint, even though it's 80% water. It has a little imprint of like the template of mint and its energy. And you take it, and it's sort of like that imprint like realigns your own structure a bit, and they work. So I started taking this one after everybody else beta tested, the mint one, 2 days in, because I was just, this is so stupid, but true, I was thoughtlessly taking it. Like, I really don't believe my own stuff works until it
You're
does.
Just like, I wanted to create it, take
yeah,
it. And
yeah. And I got bombarded with requests for readings, for freelance work, consulting work. And it was literally like when it rains, it pours and all these things came in. I was like, oh, I'd love to say yes, but I didn't actually have capacity. And so now when people ask me what to take, I go, you got to like whatever you are trying to bring in, make space for it. And then because I'm who I am, I decided the solution to that was to try and say yes to as much as possible.
Oh, gosh.
And then I make a time one out of time. Time is on my side to try and like stretch time so I could get all the work done. I was like, there's got to be a better way to do this. But yeah, I'm taking one right now.
So what does mint mean?
Newly minted is for abundance and cash flow.
Okay. So I figured it was probably something about manifesting and pulling it in if you said you were getting freelance work and all these other requests coming in. Yeah.
Oh my God, anywhere you have a mechanism to receive money, but it because they're made in sort of that as above, so below way in balance with nature, you have to generate work. So I had a client who bought one. She goes, well, I mean, I haven't gotten any money. I go, you sold your business and you're not working and you don't know what you want to do. And she's like, yeah, I go, well, it's not going to just put money in your bank account. Like it generates activity and market demand is really what it's about. And it's funny when you watch mint in nature, like the first year I grew it, covered with pollinators. And I had roses and all these other things. The bees didn't care. They loved the mint. And in old, I was reading old witchy stuff about mint. And that's why I guess it has this abundance energy, is all the chi and all the work. It's like a high vibration tincture. Yeah, watching them, growing them from seed, and watching them and their behaviors of when they bloom and what animals live where in the garden has been really illuminating. It's been an education.
What are your favorites? So, like, what are your go-tos? Because I have one that I'm going to ask you about if you have any experience, but I'd love to hear yours first.
Sure. Yeah. The one I'm taking right now that I just started taking that I love is desert rose. So I live in a place now where I can actually grow desert rose, which is crazy. And it's called Reclaim Yourself. And so what it does is helps your energy body call back all of the little bits and pieces of itself that maybe are attached to other people or splintered off at traumas, or, you know, doing psychic work and you're connecting with people's energy bodies, with their relatives' energy bodies. And it's like, how much of you maybe leaks out in that process? So calling that all back in. That's my new favorite.
I'm going to have to get one of those. Yeah, the one I love to work with, and not a lot of people know about it, is clary sage, the clary sage essential oil.
Okay.
So when I was, again, early on in my Reiki, I had the angels, they were saying, use clary sage. I knew nothing about it, essential oil, anything like that. But I would start to use it in my healings. And then they were like, well, it's less for the people and it's more for you as an energy healer and an energy worker. So, you know, of course I'm putting like lots of it all over me, like just spraying myself. I would put it in water, spray it just to like cleanse my aura and that sort of thing. And then of course, afterwards, like you'd think you do research before, afterwards, I find out it helps with right? Well, when you get it from source, in my mind, I'm like, okay, you know better than I do. So I'm just going to listen to you, right? But at the end of the day, like afterwards, I'm like, it helps reduce stress. It helps to reduce anxiety, which I would tend to get early on or as growing up, just with, again, all of the psychic connections that I had. So it kind of cuts that. But then also it's a really good healing essential oil. So I use that. I get some, the organic, and I pray over it and I ask my angels to charge it with energy healing power. And then that's what I use.
That's great.
So yeah, I would love to get some of your stuff off your website.
I love essential oils. Well, these guys are 80% water. They're tincture. You actually consume them.
Yeah, that's what you were saying, tincture, and I haven't done that before. So
I sent them to a couple of people that were like putting them on their wrists, and I'm like, no, guys, like put it inside. But we do make two sprays, which just happened accidentally, mainly because I needed them. I make a sage flower essence called holy water, which I think is pretty clever. It looks super serious in its black bottle. It says holy water on it. But it occurred to me, like, I was going to be traveling, and I can't sage when I travel. Right? You can't sage in a hotel room. You can't light shit on fire and set off fire detectors. But also, it's exactly when you need sage. Travel hits me really hard.
And hotels.
Especially now, airplanes are toxic. And so I just put them in a spray bottle. And I was like, oh yeah, holy water spray. So now I sell that, mainly because I created it so I could use it, honestly. And we also made one with creosote that smells like a storm, like the negative ions in the air. And creosote is a plant sacred to Native Americans for their rain dance. And I'm like, this can't be an accident. Definitely a spray. It is one of the most noxious smells and flavors, like in terms of a tincture. So that's a spray only. But it smells like a storm. It smells like ozone.
Oh, I love that. Well, now I definitely need the holy water because I travel a lot for work too. So
it doesn't stain anything. I tested it because I have really expensive white sheets. So the first thing I did was like test it on a corner. Because the sage, when you see it in its bottle before it goes into the tincture bottle, it's really intensely green, even with 80% water in there. Like it's intense and it doesn't stain.
Good. Well, I will try it and I will confirm that as well. Anything else you'd like to share with the listeners? I've really, really enjoyed our conversation. It's been so fun.
Well, thank you. Yeah, me too. I would just say, like, if you're curious, but you don't want to hang out with like a bunch of weird people or join a club or have this kind of take over your life, there are ways for you to do that. And honestly, the best way to learn, in my experience, has been just reading about things that I'm curious about. And that might lead me to a documentary, that might lead me to another book. Or, you know, a lot of times too, we'll dream about things that we should be gravitating to. So I was raised Catholic. I'm Native American and Irish. As a young kid, I took an interest in Hebrew. There's a reason for that. Like I was a very, very advanced Kabbalah student. And thank God I found some people that were willing to teach me. Because it's pretty insular. I mean, even women learning Kabbalah is sort of a whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
So rolling with that, and to your point, getting those messages from source, like that's your higher self. That's stuff that exists out of this particular iteration of you in this body. And it gets to more of those deeper truths.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's so wild when I think about just the journey I'm on and what journey everybody else has and looking into the next year ahead and all of that, what we all have coming up. And I was just like, if anything, it's like, hold on to your britches. So if any, again, anything, just tapping into that higher self and being open to source, I think is the biggest thing coming into this as we round out the year.
If my client readings and the data I'm getting from my guides is accurate, it's going to be a wild time to be alive on planet Earth.
Yep.
So a lot of these tools can help you just with basic self-care, managing your energy, you know, things that we'll all need, I think. I think this winter is going to be kind of intense.
Yeah, this winter is going to be intense. And I know people are like, oh no, whatever. But here's a little bit of good news with the bad is that what Spirit has told me is in the last 2 years or so, if you've really been doing the work, you've really been leaning in, you've been open, you're more conscious, it's almost like you're going to be watching a movie where it's not that you're not empathetic, it's just that it's not impacting you as much. And you're kind of like, oh, okay. And you're able to navigate through it on a much more deeper spiritual level. If you haven't been doing that, then hold on. That's what I meant. Hold on to your britches, because the world is not going to, unfortunately, die down a little bit and be all of this relaxation kind of mode. But spiritually, again, those of us who have will be like, next year is a year of rest and relaxation is what I kept hearing. But it doesn't mean that the chaos around us is going to be any more or less, chaotic. It is what it is.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm just curious if that's what you were getting on your end too.
Yeah, Odin in particular is one of my primary guides. And I'm grateful for that because he's fun.
Oh, I love Odin.
And he likes women. but he's been for the last year, almost exactly. He's like, you know, you need to get ready. Like, in just preparing me to manage boundaries when events unfold. Because he said a lot of people are going to want to know what to do, what things mean, but they're not all going to be able to maybe receive it because it'll be such a weird psychological shift. To just sort of get really comfortable with managing self and slowing down and a lot of self-care and to not worry about the difference between being someone watching the movie and being in the movie. There's only so much of that I can manage. And he sort of comforted me with, like, everyone's made a lot of free will choices. You know, it's not on you to manage that for them, and released me, I think, a little bit of some expectations I would have otherwise had of myself.
And that's a huge message for anyone listening, is it's exactly that. It is not up to any of us to manage the other choices other people have made and where they are in their life.
Yeah.
We can be supportive. We can help them with certain tools and resources, whether you're a light worker, an energy healer, any sort of practitioner, or just a human being who's trying to help their family and friends. At the end of the day, that's their choices, their lives. But what we can do is stay within ourselves, our own light, and share that and not be as impacted as we probably have been over the last 2 years, because we've done the work. We've put in the time. We still have work to do, but
it's been interesting the last 2 years. And that's precisely sort of when I shift to Totem full time. So that's interesting. Like, everybody seems to be getting the call. Mm-hmm. And that's really the genesis of why I started doing coaching work, was like, you know, these are good people. They're very naturally talented. I'm doing some virtual retreats with some of them now as, you know, my equals, cool. My collaborators. And if I can help them and steer them away from someone who wants six figures for an MLM, like, it's the least I can do. I'm happy to be here.
Well, how can people reach you? How would you like them to reach out to you and get a hold of you?
I am passive aggressively on Instagram. So if you like someone who's obviously not happy being there, at Totem Rach on Instagram, and then just totemreadings.com. That's my website. You can reach me. All of these lovely podcasts that I've been doing, I've been sharing those on there as well. So poke around, take a look. Yeah.
I love how you said that passive aggressive on Instagram. You're there.
I am. I'm a petulant child about it. It feels like school the second semester when I was a senior. Like, why? What are we doing here?
It's like one of those, you have to sort of be on it, but at the end of the day, not really. I don't know. Yeah, I'm kind of on it just because I feel like I have to be. But at some point, I'm going to hop off.
I can't wait for that day. I'm excited for you already. I'm planning mine now. Yeah.
Well, thanks again, Rachel. Really appreciate you and would love to have you back and we can talk more and definitely get in with our dragons and see. Ooh, I just saw a big, huge angel there. That was awesome. Well, that was a good sign off for us all. Angels say hello and goodbye, and dragons at some point are coming for Rachel and me and maybe a book or something, and talk more with you in the future. Thanks again for being on.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to A Psychic Story. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode and join the conversation on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. All episodes are free on your favorite podcast player or at apsychicstory.com. Have a question? Is there a topic you'd like to hear more about? Or have a suggestion for a future guest? Send an email to contact@apsychicstory.com or leave a voicemail message at 1-800-880-1881. We'd love to hear from you, and you may even be featured on a future episode. If you're interested in booking a session with me, you can do that directly on the website. And if you want to hear even more content hosted by yours truly, check out my other show, Supernatural Matters. Reminder that you are automatically entered to win either a free 20-minute intuitive or energy healing session with me if you leave 5 stars along with a positive review. Currently, reviews can be left on Apple, Stitcher, Podchaser, or CastBox podcast players. Don't forget to email contact@apsychicstory.com when you do, because it allows me to get in touch with you if your name is pulled in the drawing. Your name stays in until you win.